Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello, friends. Coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington, this is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show radiating from the beehive of creativity, civic engagement, and cultural awareness known as the Jean Bosch Voice of Vachon Broadcast Studio in bustling and bodacious heart of our pastoral community. This is, that was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. I'm doing this sans glasses, everyone. Get ready, it's going to be a ride. All right. Together, we, the Brieflys, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent, quote-unquote, discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra, less is more, more or less. Our Briefly panel includes legal beagle, mediator, Fulbright scholar, high fashion women's shoe salesman, and vocalist Craig Bellis.
Hey, good morning. Great to be here.
Good morning. Historian, professor, mariner, and guardian of the galaxy, Dr. Bruce Holman.
Good to be here. The galaxy is fading on us, I'm afraid, right now.
I think
the Democrats are in retreat.
Yeah, maybe just, I think you should take on the galaxy part and leave the nation to others.
Right.
Yeah, you just worry about the galaxy.
Stick with the stars, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's the strategy there. All right, fellow mariner to Bruce, backpacker, climber, cyclist, top secret engineer and rower, Kevin Jones.
Hey, good to see you, everybody.
Hello, hello.
Beautiful day on Vachon today.
It is. We're spoiled. All right. We've also got Treetop Flyer, Vachon Airport Commissioner, and our big board pilot and mostly reformed Texan, Truman O'Brien.
And recently reelected Airport Commissioner, yes. And congratulations to you, Amy, for your reelection as well.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Back at you. All right. And I am a part-time Politico, affordable housing advocate, Vachon Island Fire and Rescue Commissioner, newly reelected, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer. And our small talk guests today, we've got Alice Larson and Bill Cleaver, part of the team staging the Degenerate Art Show at Snapdragon this month. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, get right on up
Good morning.
That mic. Yeah, just... You love it. It's your favorite mic. All right. Before we cover the news of the day, in our usual lighthearted but passionately serious fashion, let's first check in with the Brieflys and our guests about how things are going. Craig, how was your week?
My week was great. I had a wonderful week. Last Thursday was the Thursday morning scramble. I had two of my co-hosts, Mike, the magician of the harmonica, was with me, as well as Stephen Diablo Blanco Holtz was there, and we had a show dedicated all to one-hit wonders.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah, one-hit wonders is an interesting category. Also, how you define a one-hit wonder is an interesting conundrum as well. Mm-hmm. But that was a fun show. But then we went to a fun show. We went to Benaroya on Sunday and watched 90-year-old Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass play an incredible concert. Absolutely incredible. He got up there and he just sounded like he did back in the 60s. This is the fifth time that I've seen Herb Alpert play.
Nice.
Wow. First time was in 1966 when he was a young man with black hair and before he started A&M Records and became a billionaire.
Yeah.
But the show at Benaroya, every show that he's done so far this tour, I think there's 34 of them or something, sold out.
Yeah. Wow. I can't believe I didn't hear about this. I'm so bummed.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're so doggone busy, Amy. you got to occasionally look at what's happening.
I got to look up.
Yeah.
So that was my week.
All right. That sounds all right. Kevin, how about you?
Okay. Hey, let's see. A couple of things. We did have an election.
Yes. Yeah, yes, you got to be riding a little bit high this week, huh?
Yeah. We had an election. You know, all the apologies now for the government unshutdown set aside. The deal is that each of the competitive races that we identified, except one, we had one long shot in there. All of them swept the table. So it was, of course, a wonderful night, and for progressives. And the whole looking at the amount of the electoral swing bodes well, even though, you know, the frustration over how the shutdown may have ended. We'll see, you know, what happens as we continue on. And I will have to say, let's see, I know we're going to talk about the degenerate art show, but November 7th opening, I know the drum corps from Indivisible Vashon was there going strong. So that was awesome. Today, this morning, rowing was mere flat water and super, super nice to be out there.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. And I know Krishna Dawson pulled out that state Senate win over in Kitsap, and it was a close one. So kudos to Indivisible Vashon and all the folks who went out there to knock doors, because that indeed was a important groundswell to support her. All right.
As a matter of fact, you'll hear more about that if you're available on Wednesday night at the Vashon Methodist Church. We're going to have our membership meeting. We're going to look back at the year and forward to 2026. And then after that, a little bit of, you know, info from Indivisible Vashon. Then we're just going to sort of let our hair down and celebrate. We've got some desserts coming in, some beverages, and we're just going to sort of socialize for a bit.
Excellent. And, excellent.
Look forward to that.
Wednesday night's going to be busy.
That'll be coming up.
Yeah.
It's going to be busy. Yeah. Stop on by the Methodist Church. Doors open at 6:30. And I assume you're going to go to Craig. He's going to probably talk about what's coming up tomorrow night.
We got a lot. It's advocacy week right now. All right. Alice, sorry. I think I know how your week might have gone. But what were some of your highlights this week?
The big highlight was the opening of our degenerate art show. It just was spectacular. People came, and we'll probably get into that more. Would you like me to describe it?
Yeah, no, we will dig deep. We will dig deep in our small talk segment. But okay. Yeah, what was a favorite moment from the night, though?
A favorite moment for the night, seeing Megan and Adam smile all the time and listening to really content-driven conversations, as opposed to what you usually get at, you know, any social gathering. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we gathered art that made people think.
Excellent.
So what more is there to do than that? Another highlight was I had a work-related friend visiting from Arizona who did go to the game. And I've been kind enough not to text her afterwards. So that was kind of a highlight as well.
Fair enough. And let's see, Truman, how about you?
Well, you know, we often talk about our home projects. Well, I've lived in this home for 35 years now. And just last month, my insurance company sent out a photographer to, you know, update the place and take pictures. And I heard from an agent saying, hey, we got these pictures, and they had some questions about things. One of which was, why don't you have a railing on your back steps? You know, I've only been there. It's only been that way for 30 odd years.
You haven't needed them to tell me.
I haven't needed them. Well, except I did take a fall. You know, a couple of years ago, I did slip on the slippery thing. But anyway, so my week was building a railing on my staircase. So. And I woke up the next morning, I could hardly get out of bed. I hate to admit it, but it was quite a job. But that was my week.
Oof. Congratulations. All right. Bruce, how about you?
Well, a fascinating week with, and Kevin mentioned, the blue wave we saw on Tuesday. What's fascinating is, as you're reading the papers now, that blue wave is washing up on the shores of library districts and school districts and local community elections. I mean, it's broader than anybody imagined it would be. So there's hope in this dark, dark time. The other great thing was, of course, the Seahawks scoring 14 points in the first 2 minutes of a game against the Cardinals. It's sort of like, wow, where did this team come from? And they're going to be tested this Sunday. They play the Rams, and those are probably two of the better teams in the NFL right now. So that will be interesting. The rest of the week, yard work, sort of getting ready for winter, that kind of stuff. And then Friday night went to the talk at the Land Trust. Rocky talking about restoration of Vashon streams. And that's a really fascinating sort of potential there to see how that develops. Other than that, and grandkids' soccer games. My grandson's getting ready for the Nutcracker. And so it's just a busy time of year.
Yeah, it is. That holiday season it's kind of sneaking up on us a little bit. Indeed. All right. And Bill, how about you?
Getting ready for the Degenerate show was pretty much the whole week's events. I had a lot of pieces built, but they needed the final little details to be put in. And I have to tell you that when we hung the show, it was a lot of smiles, really relaxed. And I've been doing artwork most of my life, but this was one of the smoother, funnest ways to hang a show. It was very spontaneous and joyful. So highlight of my week.
Excellent. Art can be so many things. It can be fun. It can be serious. It can be fun. It can be serious and fun at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fun is the name of the game. Mm-hmm. You can do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. And let's see. So I'm with Kevin. The part-time Politico in me had a great and interesting week this week. I would say a highlight from my weekend was getting a couple emails from Aaron House, who is the chief of staff at Mosqueda's office, talking about some of the really critical budget provisos that Mosqueda has put in as a result of listening, very deep listening with the Vashon community. One of them being relating to Vashon household, very critical. Mosqueda has listened very deeply when we have said it is time for the county to stop saying why we cannot build ADUs, right? Time for public health to start figuring out ways to say yes and stop saying no. So she has put in a proviso directing public health to produce a report talking about how they can innovate with ADUs and wastewater solutions and how they can make policy changes to make building ADUs easier and dealing with septic and wastewater easier. So Vashon, you have an opportunity to testify about that and why we need ADUs on Vashon at 5:30 on Wednesday at the King County Council meeting, virtually or online, and you can learn more about that at Vashon Household social media. But as we know, ADUs and not having the same kind of access to building ADUs is a huge barrier to Vashon housing. So looking forward to making moves on that. And then, of course, another proviso looking at ways to keep funding that water taxi, funding Saturday water taxi and sports, right? So getting special runs for Vashon water taxi for sporting events, right? Mariners, Kraken, Seahawks, all that kind of stuff. So really, really happy Mosqueda's office is listening to us. And in a time when government feels like the problem and not the solution, it is incredible to have someone advocating for us who's looking for solutions. Kevin.
A couple things. Bruce mentioned the blue wave ran pretty deep. In Whatcom County, they are so excited because they have a super majority of progressives on their county council.
Wow.
And I think that even made the national news on one of the reports I read. But the other thing that I want to say is tonight at the Vashon High School Theater, Craig Bellis is going to
introduce. Thursday night, actually. Another.
No.
It's, Craig, what are you doing with your life?
Thing. This is tonight, the Heroes 4. So Eugene Debs, who was big on protests, and the whole protest look back with Dr. Larry Hubble. And we are going to not only have the Free Range Freedom Choir opening up at 6:30. You can sing along. They're going to have the lyrics up on the screen. So come into the Vashon High School Theater, 6:30, sing along. Bring your protest signs because we're going to decorate the stage be ready for the closing with our protest action leader, Nick Provo, will basically be drummed onto the stage by the Bucket Brigade. And it's going to be so much fun that you're not going to want to miss it. And guess who's introducing that whole affair? Craig Bellis.
Hey, thank you. And Amy, while we're at it, Thursday night.
Yeah, Thursday.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, we've got I thought we were supposed to be done after last week, after Tuesday, right? We're done. We don't have to advocate anymore. Is that how that works? No? All right. So we got a lineup. So tonight we're going to get inspired with Craig and Dr. Hubble and the Freedom Corps at the Vashon High School Theater at 6:30. Is that right? Yeah. 6:30.
Doors open at 6:30. Absolutely. Yep.
Yep. All right. So
Be there at 6:30. That's when the singing starts.
Go get some inspiration from Eugene Debs, because man, that guy is an inspirational guy. And then tomorrow night, you can testify before King County virtually at the budget meeting and talk about why ADUs are so important to you. Then you get to go to the Indivisible meeting at the Methodist Church at 6:30. And then on Thursday night, Mr. Craig Bellis is back on stage at the Vashon High School Theater at 6, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., we've got our legislator forum, and that's our state legislator forum, right? So state legislators can do a whole bunch of things for us that is different than what we can get done at the county or national level. And we will be hearing directly from all of our delegation, the 34th District, so Emily Alvarado, Joe Fitzgibbon, and newly elected Brianna Thomas will be reporting back on last year and what they brought home for the district, and for sure talking about what's going to be a very tough budget year this session for folks. And Craig Bellis will be moderating that.
I'll be on stage with my blue suede shoes.
Excellent. All right. So it's advocacy week here on Vashon. Let's surf that blue wave into the future. All right. Moving on. Let's check in and see what kind of hope and inspiration we can conjure up from history. And of course, today in history, we are reminded that in 1918 at 5 a.m. on November 11th, the Allies and Germany signed an armistice in the railway carriage in France. I'm not even going to try to say that one because French people will never forgive me. But the ceasefire officially went into effect 6 hours later at the 11th hour on the 11th day of the 11th month. And November 11th was first commemorated as Armistice Day to honor the veterans of World War I. And then after World War II and the Korean War, the U.S. expanded the observance to honor American veterans of all wars, renaming today Veterans Day in 1954. So we are honoring all who have served today.
And our show, our morning scramble show this morning, we played music from the World War II era, all the big band stuff. It was really fun to honoring some of my brother veterans. So that was fun.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you to all who have served and made it possible for us to be here today advocating so passionately for our democracy. We appreciate that. All right. And then in 1889, Washington was admitted to the Union as the 42nd United States. So it's Washington Day today. That feels overshadowed a little bit, because I also saw that it's Indiana Day. What the heck? Come on, Indiana. Stepping on our mo here. Yeah.
They had to balance the Midwest and the Far West. They couldn't let just one at a time.
It was a something compromise. It was the Indiana compromise.
The left coast that we're talking about. Yeah.
The left coast compromise. I like it. All right. And as I mentioned, Indiana Day. I'm going to call it Washington Day. And then also it's National Sunday Day. And that's Sunday with an A-E. So head on over to Island Queen. I can't remember if they're open today or not.
They're not. Not on Tuesday. Sorry.
Well, you can celebrate Sunday Day any day at the Island
that's
Queen,
true.
Located right next to the Voice of Vashon in beautiful downtown Vashon. Yeah. All right. Small talk. Let's get to the heart of this here today. We'll start with some introductions. Alice and Bill, tell us a little bit more about yourselves, and we always like to hear from each of you what the heck led you to set up camp here on Vashon Island.
Okay, I'm known as the origami artist on Vashon, so for 7 years I had an origami gallery, which was almost unheard of around the world, just two doors from VOV. And what led me to Vashon? So was raised in Texas. I'm not sure I'm Reformed Texan. There's still Texas roots in there.
Whereabouts? Whereabouts in Texas?
Dallas, which is just pretension. Yeah. So, and concrete.
Yeah.
But when I moved to the Northwest, lived in West Seattle, and I didn't realize I was addicted to salt water. And so it was way back in the 80s, and we started looking for waterfront houses. Even back then, quickly discovered couldn't afford anything in Seattle. So our view actually did look out over Vashon. And so started looking here, looked here for 5 years. So originally it was the cheap place that maybe we could get waterfront. But also it was when the Virginia 5 was just starting to do circumnavigation, not associated with Heritage. And there was one particular trip that they picked up a group from West Seattle and then came over to Vashon, actually landing at Ellsport, and did the same thing after they circumnavigated the island. And it just felt like we should get off and stay on Vashon. So that's really how I got here.
Mm-hmm. That I've heard more than one story of someone who got off the boat and just kind of never got back on. Like, you know what, I think I'm going to stay.
And what year was that, Alice?
84. Bought the house in 84, which I couldn't afford to buy today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, remember when there were real estate books, the old real estate books? Mm-hmm. I still have some of those, and I like to torture people by bringing them out and showing them their
the
house.
Prices, yeah.
And what it cost back then.
Oof, ow. Felt that one in my kidneys, I think.
Yeah.
All right, Bill.
Similar story. I moved here in also in 1984, and someone had dropped a beachcomber off, and I had been living, I grew up in Seattle, had traveled a lot, just returned from a very rural part of Alaska, commercial fishing, and happened upon Paradise Cove where this rental was and the walk-in beachside and saw Camp Seattle, this beautiful sunny day, and just said, this is where I'm going to stay. And the island then was quite different, of course, and very rural, and it just gave me a sense of freedom. Plus, it was just far enough away from my parents in Seattle that I had have excuses not to show up all the time. So, it was like exploring a new world here. I had come over as a kid on my bicycle and, you know, enjoyed how rural it was. I remember riding the bike down the center lane of the highway once I got up the steep hill. And it just really resonated with me. The only thing I had in mind was how was I going to survive here. There weren't a lot of job opportunities. I had an art background and quickly fell back on that. But I just felt a real instant community sense here. And, you know, I'll tell more about my background when the time comes. But I still love the place and I'm still here, and that's been a while.
I have to tell you one real quick story on Camp Seattle. My wife was working with a woman in Seattle, and she said that we were actually living at Camp Seattle in 1975. And she mentioned that to her that, and this woman went, Camp Seattle is on Vashon? she took the good time to come out to the camp. She said, I thought it was thousands of miles away. I had no idea it was just on Vashon. Anyway, I thought that was always cute.
The magical Isle of Vashon. Indeed. That's right. It feels like a world away.
It does.
Right?
That's what made me think of it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So without delving too deeply into kind of the meat of the degenerate art conversation here. Just kind of give us a basic overview, the who, what, when, where of the degenerate art installation at Snapdragon. What are we talking about?
Well, I can tell you how it happened. So Mark Peace, one of our six artists, sent me an article that described Hitler in the 1930s and Hitler's campaign against art and artists, primarily aimed at modern art, and how he went after artists, forbid their art from being shown, banned them, drummed them basically out of Germany. And he called this art degenerate art. And as soon as I saw that term, I said, oh, we got to have a degenerate art show. It took me 5 months to find a venue. I always had the artists in mind. And so they're incredible, well-known artists. And all of them have a political bent. There was one of them that surprised me, that I'll talk about later. Basically, we just wanted a way. Well, actually, I should punt to Bill, because Bill, I think, summarized what we were trying to do as artists with the show.
It's just expressing kind of how you feel through your medium. And for me, when he first came down that golden escalator, I just felt compelled to do a piece. And I've collected a lot of things. I'm doing assemblages, which is a bit different from my more formal background, which was in leatherwork, cowboy, and that eventually evolved to fashion and many other things. But these assemblages are just something that I can be spontaneous with. And I just made a statement, which is over at the show. And then on the second round, Bill Reed, alternative Bill, came in and we both had despair, and he looked at me and he said, what are we going to do? And I said, I'm going to put it into art. So I pretty much have been in between my other projects, building things that just come to my mind that have humor, but hopefully will really stick with the person that looks at it. And, you know, I just feel a sense I can release the way I feel into my work, and hopefully it'll stick with other people.
And I think that's true for all of the artists.
Yeah.
No, we all feel like art is a way we can express our disgust, dismay with what's going on. And all of us have, you know, a bit of humor and also thoughtfulness in the art that we do, and certainly the art that we presented in the show.
Yeah, it's not directly in your face. You have to think about a lot of these pieces a bit, which is an important part to it. I think it requires a little consciousness to look at all the elements and what they're saying, rather than just a lot of people are doing pretty blatant slams against what's going on. These are, I feel, a little more sophisticated, and that's an important part.
So what is going on? I mean, what are you responding to? I mean, what are the specific things that are in this show that are responding to? I mean, it's always easy to generalize and say what's going on, but what is going on in your minds and you as artists and the others in the exhibit that you're responding to?
I feel threatened. I feel like there's a potential for so much discord that, and it will affect what I can say. And I think we've, as a democracy, worked real hard to have freedoms that are being taken away. And it's I want to be informed. I listen to the news. I just feel a weight, and I want to shed it any way I can. And I want to, rather, I just think we've got more intellect than this other group, and we are looking for that channel.
And I think I'm the real political one of the group. Professionally, I'm a social service researcher, and I've worked with some of the groups that are being hit the most, immigrants, low income, those who need health care, those who need food assistance. I've done this all my life. My art Most people are familiar with my mobiles, my earrings, that kind of thing. But my large installations tend to be actually political. One of my pieces called Migration is Beautiful. Butterflies are actually a symbol for immigrants, particularly monarch butterflies. And the number 1,000 is very meaningful in Japanese culture and in origami. So I made 1,000 butterflies, put them on monofilament so that they can fly up walls and on ceilings. Named it, as I said, Migration is Beautiful. This year, I should say, Bill built me a box, which is literally a brown box with barbed wire on it, where some of the strands are coming out. Unfortunately, I made this piece in 2017 when Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival, DACA, was the big topic. And it is even more relevant today, sad to say. So, you know, in terms of my relationship, I am speaking to all of what's going on and all of the cruelty and all of what's happening to our country and our government and our democracy and the people that we're affecting around the world.
And I have a bit of background in the Western end of things. I was a specialist with building cowboy gear, very high end, and it connected me to a lot of clients and around the world, but primarily in this country. And I've lost all those close friends because they don't want change. They're threatened by any form of moving forward and looking at a bigger picture. So that's a very personal note with me. I experienced these people who I thought were very true long-term friends, and everything, well, I've gone in a new direction, and but the sad thing is I lost people I really considered to be my friends.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Just real quick, what other artists are participating in the show?
We've got Greg. Actually, it just happens, not that either gallery is associated with our exhibit, but there are three artists associated with Valise Gallery and three artists associated with Swiftwater. So the Swiftwater side, there's Bill, myself, and Mark Pease. And the Valise side, there's Bill Jarko, Greg Burnham, and Leonard Yen. Mm-hmm.
You know, the two of you, and I'm sure the other artists, have tremendous bodies of work. I know, Bill, you have a lot of art that you've done for years and years. And Allison, a lot of your work, Alice, is large, very large, one of which hung here in the studio for quite some time. Right. The origami work that you do. How did you choose amongst all of these pieces? How did you choose what to bring? We went in there. My wife and I went in there on Friday during the opening, and it was really quite spectacular and attended. It was packed basically right away, and it was a wonderful show. But as I looked around, I saw these various bits of art, and I'm sure some of them weren't made yesterday. They were may have been made some time ago.
Well, if I could start, because then I want to lead into Bill, because I have something to say about his art as well. So I have my large installation that runs throughout the exhibit, Migration is Beautiful. I have an American flag with origami cranes for the stars that I literally physically carried to Obama's first inauguration. Title of that is I Remember When This Meant Something. And then I did make a new piece for this show called The Country You Wanted. So back in January, I had cards made that say, voted for Trump, congratulations, you got the country you wanted, I hope you enjoy it. And so I used that as a base, and I have supplicants worshiping in front of a picture of, and I had a discussion whether I could use this term. I always refer to him as Lying Donald because he has nicknamed so many people, so I can't say that term without using that. And some of them are like fawning over. All of them are saluting. Some of them are being stepped on. So for me, it was three distinct pieces that met the theme. And the reason that I want to lead into Bill talking about his artwork is because Bill's the one artist I couldn't get to stop producing art. It's like, even, you know, after the show was up, Bill sending me an image, and it's all incredibly right there and wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. Well, after that first piece I did, it just started clicking. And I'm kind of, the last 5 years I've gone into more assemblages. They're influenced by Joseph Cornell and a few people. It's a departure from my past work, but it's so free. And these ideas, I mean, just watch the news, from dropping a golf ball to anything this guy does is wide open for a kind of a statement and a parody on it. And I then go to Granny's or my collection and find the components, and they're just clicking beautifully. And I'm trying to keep them quite simple, but with humor, but again, really to the point to make you think. So this has been fun for me.
Yeah, Kevin.
You know, I was thinking about how art can influence people's thinking. And, you know, I know that with the Invisible Vashon, the Bucket Brigade, and art and music and all of that kind of fusion of that kind of energy. But you kind of mentioned earlier, I think, Alice, that, you know, art helps you express your dismay. Is art... how do you see it folding into demonstrations and protests? How do you see the relationship between artwork and the memes, you know, that we see so often these days? And where do you think the future? We have a bit of a runway ahead of us before we see a change in the administration. How do you see art evolving through this time that we're experiencing right now, in terms of, you know, reflecting what's happening in the country and reacting and responding to it?
I think Bill put it best when we were talking about this early, and he said, and his background is art. He's been doing that, you know, most of his career, that art is a way that artists can express their dismay, disgust, express what they're feeling and seeing around them. And when I think of art, I'm not just thinking of visual art. I'm thinking of music, dance, writing, you know, very broad term of art. And in addition, also an idea that Bill felt about this exhibit, you know, we hope that other people whose, you know, area is whatever, will look at what artists have done in this exhibit and think, how can I contribute? How can I express my dismay in whatever means? And so I guess I don't see this limited at all. I would like to see degenerate art shows all over the country where groups of artists get together of any medium, you know, and express their dismay so that there's a, you know, a broad collective of that happening.
So that's a perfect segue into my question then, and that is, I know that I did not get to see the exhibit, but I understand it is primarily in the Cohen Hastings Gallery, or is it throughout?
It's throughout the whole restaurant.
It is throughout the whole restaurant.
Right as you, the entranceway, mm-hmm, most mm-hmm. of our small pieces are there, and then okay. The bigger, you know, Black Cat Cabaret room. Some larger pieces are there, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the question is, I have trouble visualizing the performance element of the show. So can you kind of describe what that was about and how you see that going forward?
I just wanted a lot of noise for mm-hmm. our opening, and so started reaching out to Invisible Vashon, and said, you know, can y'all come? And Kathy there said, oh, we got the Bucket Brigade. And I'd experienced them on the No Kings Day. I went, oh, perfect. Yeah. And then Free Range Freedom Choir had just put a notice in the Beachcomber saying, you know, we're forming. So I contacted Leslie and said, you know, hey, how about coming to the performance? And then Bill Jarko's characters, after No King's Day, he was made famous by Jon Stewart, who played a one-minute bit showing Bill's characters, which consist of lice, which are ICE agents turning into bugs, Lying Donald escorted by police officers in the costume he should be wearing. And so Bill's part of our group. And so it was easy to say, hey, Bill, how about? Yeah. So it just it was a way to draw attention. And it grew, and I'm oh so grateful to all of those folks because it really added to the evening.
So do you see this performance element going forward in the show, or is this just going to be kind of a one-time thing for the exhibit?
I would love for any of those groups or others to come and make noise about what they see, but it's not something that I'm planning to... coordinate, although you've mentioned, you know, a couple of instances where some of those groups that, you know, were helpful to us on opening night are going on to do other performances. So,
and I would imagine now, when does the show run? How long does it run?
It's scheduled to end in November. So it's running all of November.
Okay. So if somebody just kind of got inspired and came on down and wanted to make some noise or participate in their own way, I kind of imagine that's the spirit of the show, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And the timing was perfect for me. I was just building these pieces and I did not really have any specific place I was going to show them. I'm in the Vashon, the old Vashon post office, the one at the marina, and I have a small gallery, but I didn't want to flood it with just that work. This is very specific. And so Alice had been following what I was doing, and thanks to her, put this whole idea together and then incorporated more people that were all on the same page. But I'm going to continue to build them. I don't know where they'll end up, but it's, again, giving me this contribution, I feel. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I feel very strongly about it.
I would like to say something about one of our artists. So Leonard Yen, who is more an abstract kind of artist and was not somebody in the original group that I, you know, approached to be part of the show. So one of the people I was thinking of dropped out, and Leonard said, well, I have a piece you might be interested in, kind of like, okay. Leonard's piece ties the 1930s theme to our present day exhibit. And what it is called Ode to Lucian Freud. And Lucian Freud was one of those artists that was banished by Hitler in the 30s, went on to have an incredible art career. And Leonard's story is that he had just finished painting a portrait of Lucian Freud when the man passed away. Hmm. So, and I just looked it up. So that was 2011. So when he heard, he took that painting and ripped it up and made it into a collage. Hmm. So Leonard only has one piece in this exhibit, but to me, it's an extremely powerful piece.
Yeah. So that brings up the question, how many pieces are there in the exhibit?
There are 42.
Okay, wow.
Vashon is prolific in speaking through our art. Kevin, you had a question?
Yep.
I just wanted to do a follow-up comment. The you mentioned the Bucca Brigade and Bill Jarko and the, you know, who's associated with Backbone Campaign, right? We know Backbone Campaign, artful activism, and there's so many different ways to portray through art, different types of art, right? How people are feeling, and what we've seen is that it just draws people in who otherwise may step out. And so you mentioned earlier, you know, people are talking, they're asking questions, they're thinking about what they're seeing. So kudos for moving into this degenerate art show. I hope it goes across the country like crazy, because that's what we need, more people thinking and seeing and interacting with others who are kind of interpreting what they're seeing and how they're feeling about how that's going. So yeah, really appreciate all of those different types of media that can come together that way.
Yeah, thank you. I couldn't agree more.
And I think if the piece is powerful enough, it's going to make that statement. Yes. I just have a personal way of approaching it with not too busy, but just the right elements to say what I want to say. And hopefully that will lock in to the person that sees it.
You know, I'm thinking about you go through the Louvre or you go through any art museum and it's static. You're just looking at it going, hey, well, you know, I mean, you know what I mean?
There's too much in there.
Yeah, this strikes me as being just the opposite, it elicits expression and comment from the folks that are seeing it, correct?
Yes, and you know, it's one thing I've learned about doing artwork since I arrived on the island. Well, since a little kid, my whole life. Mm-hmm. I'm just, particularly with this subject matter, if I can make it as powerful with that simplicity, it just warms me to think someone would take that particular thought that they generated from it in the direction that I'm promoting and go forward with. Is again my contribution to the frustration I have not doing anything.
Changes the way people think.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah.
So I didn't want to leave out two of our artists that we haven't really mentioned. Mark Pease, who does a variety of things. He does collective collage kinds of things, but he does a lot of encaustic work. And so, and he's a baseball fanatic. And so Mark's pieces, you know, combine Lying Donald's, quote, sports activity, golf, you know, counter-imaged on the other side with one of the actions that's going on. And Greg Burnham, who I keep saying has a sarcastic sense of humor exactly like mine, which is dangerous in terms of me purchasing his pieces, but he's always got a thoughtful twist of phrase and usually in a bright appearance. When we were putting the show up, he has something, a piece that looks like a chalkboard, and it starts out by saying today's menu. And so we put it right at the front next to the counter where people order. Oh, and yes, perfect. People walk in and they start looking at the menu and then read what Greg has to say. So.
And the titles are very integral to the pieces too, yes, on many of them. And it really makes a full circle.
It's disruptive, right? I mean, I think Vashon, we've got a particular reputation, right? And I think a lot of people kind of know what to expect, but art should be disruptive. Right. And so finding ways to, it feels like this show really finds ways to be disruptive and shake up what we think we might see.
Is this a one and done thing? Are you going to come back in 6 months and show us more degenerate art?
Probably.
How much it's degenerating?
I mean, my list grows on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I can't help but make fun of all of this in a certain way. And again, I try to put humor in it because I think humor is uplifting and sticks if it's done right. So,
and I know Bill won't stop. And I've been approached by at least four other artists saying, oh, can I get in on this? And my response is, do a degenerate art show. You know, I mean, there are lots of venues here. I would like to see VCA do some form of a degenerate art show. And in Seattle, I talked to a lot of galleries there as I was publicizing our show. And there are some, you know, political art exhibits that are just starting there. And a lot of artists everywhere and gallery owners were intrigued by the thought of a degenerate art show. In terms of myself, I have told particularly Bruce, who talks me into everything, you know, that I'm not allowed to do anything for at least 8 months. No brilliant ideas for 8 months. So I think I'm going to take a little break myself.
I'm curious if this collaborative show of degenerate art has inspired you to come up with new art, seeing your fellow artists engaged in similar sort of commentary. Has there been inspiration on a personal level?
Yeah, for me, for sure. My friendship with Bill. We were in a show a year ago together, and I was so intrigued by his sculptural crows that were leather. So getting to know him and seeing his sort of diorama style has definitely made me start thinking. Resulted in actually, my new piece, I think, is direct relationship to what I see Bill do.
And for me, it's my medium has been leather, and I've incorporated it all the way through. A few years ago, an art collector got me doing the sculptural aspect of using leather. But these new pieces don't per se use leather. That's objects that, and I've collected stuff since a kid, but I'm finding things that just work so well together, I don't have to incorporate leather for the first time in my career. And that's got me looking closer at the master was Joseph Cornell and assemblages, but there's a lot of emotion that can be brought through putting certain objects together and trusting your design abilities and just making something. I smile at the end of every piece. I really do. And it's my joy in life is to pick something that thoroughly am happy doing all the time.
So I think of the six artists, a number of us didn't know each other. I knew everybody, at least a little bit. So who knows what the future holds? I think we all admire each other's work. So
I think hanging it with that many smiles was a good sign. That is not always the case. I put a show in at the hardware store about a year ago, and it was about 8 hours because it's all hung on strings, and it was extremely difficult. And I saw no smiles.
I was going to say, I've hung a number of my daughter's shows, and I don't remember any smiles in that, except for maybe, boy, I really screwed this up, you know. But otherwise, it is not fun. So I find that fascinating.
You know, I think when you set out to do a project like this, you have expectations and, you know, you have the reason that you initiated the project and that kind of thing. But, you know, then when you get a bunch of artists together, you get a bunch of people together, things start to happen that you didn't expect. So what happened in this project that maybe you didn't expect or surprised you?
I anticipated those technical problems that I've had before, but what I was really hoping to do was what happened, which is just keep it loose and let everybody as a creative person look at how this is going to go on the wall. It's not the perfect spot. It's what we fortunately could find. And everybody's interaction, just helping each other. And once it was done, it was spontaneous and it flowed. And then Alice's piece came and tied it all in. So it's kind of a installation in itself.
That's a question I was going to ask. Was there a collaboration on who puts what where?
Or we had come up with ideas. Mine was cardboard for sizes to go in. We just hung it with thumbtacks and whatever we had. And it really, and even at the end, one dark corner, Alice brought the plastering lamp I suggested, and boom, it lit the corner up. And again, spontaneous, but the art is kind of reflective of that too.
Art is spontaneous. I mean, it should be. Yeah. I think
I think that's a good question you ask. What surprised me? So I tend to be driven by projects to get an idea, and then it's like I look at all the pieces after done, and I'm busy. What gratified me was the enthusiasm of all of the artists who I expected quality work because I knew each of them, and nothing they presented disappointed at all. But the enthusiasm that was broader than just us artists. So it sort of culminated in the opening, which I think a couple hundred people came to and stayed. you know, and like I said, thoughtful conversations. But even when I was out publicizing, the interest and the agreement with what we were trying to do that I heard everywhere, that along with the election results last Tuesday, you know, it is gratifying. It's turning me from a bad pessimist to seeing this little sliver of light. And so, you know, being able to contribute to that, I think, was the gratifying thing for me.
Absolutely. And just kind of a real quick, you know, as we're closing in here, a little bit more. So you can see the show at Snapdragon through the month of November, for sure. But we've kind of just talked loosely about degenerate art, right? And maybe folks are interested in it. So tell us a little bit more. Maybe, you know, you've talked about Joseph Cornell and Assemblage. And, you know, it began sort of as a very discreet movement, right? As not in reaction to, but in a way in reaction to what was going on in Nazi Germany in the 30s. But if folks want to know a little bit more about degenerate art, can you give them a couple names, a couple works, a couple places to look to understand the movement more?
Well, in the 1930s, and I am not a student of art history. So, you know, you're talking to somebody who really doesn't have that background. But I think it was primarily a reaction to modern art. Mm-hmm. And the artists that were prevalent and becoming internationally well-known, and today we look back at as superstars, in Germany in the 30s, and having that group of art and their artists banned. And for me, the parallels that I see to what's happening today, just the curtailing of our freedom of speech all around, the taking over the Kennedy Center, the removing history and artworks from the walls of our museums.
And filled with extremely poor taste. In my book.
That's another factor.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about that. You know that during World War II, the Nazis did collect a tremendous amount of art.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a whole book series about that particular event. But I find that interesting that it only a certain kind of art was acceptable, that everything else was not.
That's what they're I feel is trying to be done. And it's it's so frustrating that someone could tell you what is good and what is bad.
Yeah.
Or what cuts it and what doesn't. That's the threat to me. I mean, we're all entitled to the way we see things and want to do it. And these are specific because they're targeting that kind of a threat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kevin.
So you mentioned, I think, Bill, or it was mentioned earlier, I think, Bill, you're going to continue on to you know, produce this.
Wait
kind
till
of
you
work.
See my cell phone piece.
Go ahead. I was just wondering if both of you have, like, you know, what's the next piece in mind? How many are there? Is it like there's so many that how do I pick? Or is it like, yeah, this one thing really comes clearly that I need to do this? And is there any particular theme that you see that you might want to reflect on as we move through this political space that we're in?
It's for me, you know, every once in a while I jump in and do a political piece. I would like to do more of those. I don't have an outlet for those, so I usually get buried in the regular origami things that I do, and I'm going to have to go back to that with a studio tour. But yeah, there will be more, I'm sure.
I've
yeah.
got a list. Wait till you see Smoke and Mirrors. That's coming up. Okay.
All right.
We're gonna have to get here where those shows are going to happen then.
We have been promised more.
Good.
We'll be back.
So next week is a Truman Show, which means you get to listen to the Briefleys pontificate. But I ask people to look at an article by Thomas Friedman, one of my favorite writers, three-time Pulitzer Prize winner. And he's sort of asking the question, what do we call the current era? I mean, we know there was the post-war era, you know, from 1945 to about 1990, Cold War era. We know there was a post-Cold War era after the fall of the Berlin Wall. But what are we in now, particularly since 2015, 2016? What do we call it?
I think that's one of those seven words you can't use on the radio.
Right, maybe.
The collapse of the empire? All right, here we go. So,
social media distortion.
Exactly. All right. So we got to go. But for Alice, Bill, Truman, Bruce, Craig, Kevin, I'm Amy, and we thank you for listening to the Brown Briefly on KVSH 101.9 Vashon, the voice of Vashon. We will see you again next week.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.